morning and welcome to MTSU on the Record. I'm Jenna Logue, and we're coming to you from the campus of Middle Tennessee State University in Murfreesboro, Tennessee. Our Center for Historic Preservation here at MTSU has been fortunate enough to receive a grant of $300,000 for the Teaching with Primary Sources program. The money comes from the Library of Congress. And it's going to enable Tennessee educators to provide their students with opportunities to access some of the most important historical documents and artifacts of the American experience. And here to talk to us about it today is Dr. Stacy Graham of the Center for Historic Preservation, who is the coordinator of this project. Thanks for being with us here, Stacy.
Thank you, Gina. I'm happy to be here.
Well, first of all, let's start out with a little Historians 101. What are primary sources?
Good question. Primary sources are what we like to refer to as the stuff of life, the very building blocks. They are documents, manuscripts, they are newspaper articles, they are works of art, they are diaries, they're anything that is produced during the time period that you're studying. Photographs are a really obvious example. They're produced by the people that you're looking at during the time period, and so they're not removed from the experience in which they were produced at all, whereas secondary sources are removed and tend to have kind of layers of interpretation on them. These are a bit more right to the point.
So a primary source would be, for example, an eyewitness account, as opposed to what a third party hears about the account taking place, just to put it in a journalistic framework.
Yes.
For an example.
Yes. When you have a quote from a person who was there at the scene, that is the primary source that you're using, where if you read about it the next day in a magazine, that would be a secondary source. Okay.
And what specific types of sources are we talking about here? Are we talking about things as fundamental as the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution, or are we talking about things with which the American public in general might not necessarily be as familiar?
Well, I think that the American public would be very surprised at the genuine breadth of sources that are available at the Library of Congress. It does range from the most famous, like the Constitution, to obscure acts of Congress, to all sorts of aspects of American life and culture throughout our entire history, even before America was even a country. So it ranges from maps from the age of exploration to photographs of baseball players in the 1950s. There are a lot of sound recordings of folk music or blues music or oral history interviews from the early 20th century. There are early silent films.
Wow.
There are pictures. Since you're looking at them in an online format, it's two-dimensional, but they're pictures of three-dimensional objects, like works of art and sculpture, and then there are just all sorts of printed materials, all sorts of written materials. There are materials of architecture, blueprints and pictures and the notes taken by people who are surveying these architectural monuments of America. And it's just about everything that you can think of that you ever read about in history class or that you ever saw on a documentary. It's all available online.
And is this the entirety of what the Library of Congress has to offer, or is the portion that will be accessible online just a fraction of the artifacts that they have in their collection?
It's a snippet that is contains over 11 million digitized items, which sounds like quite a lot, but yes, that is only part of the library's full collections. So it's not everything that is in residence at the Library of Congress is going to be available through the website, but you've got over 11 million digitized items to choose from. It's enough to keep you occupied.
Right. Now, how will this work as a practical matter? Will the teacher or the student have to have a username and password to access a special section of the what is available online, or what are the practical logistics of it?
Oh yes, well that is a very useful thing to talk about, because actually it's accessible all now to anybody. All you have to do is go to the Library of Congress website, and they have several different kinds of search strategies that they can recommend to you. There are lots of different links to help you with the search. There's a lot of opportunities to browse by subjects and by topics and titles and things like that. There are all sorts of ways to get into it, but it is very complicated because there is so much available that one thing that we want to do through this program is to help teachers and educators be able to navigate this website in a way that will be the best, most efficient use of their time, teach them to go straight to the kind of sources they're going to want to use in their classroom, and how to save it, how to download it, how to print it out, and how to cite it if they're going to be using it.
In a way that specifically speaks to their curriculum, their lesson plan.
Yes. Oh, we don't want to just say, well, here's the Library of Congress website,
right.
Have fun, which, if you know, it is a lot of fun, and, and people who want to spend the time. But of course, teachers have so many things to do with their time that we don't want this to be a burden on them. We want to make this help them in their lessons. We want their lessons to be easier because of this, not more complicated.
Right.
So one thing that we want to do is kind of separate certain primary source sets according to different topics in history that we can kind of tailor make, maybe suggest certain lesson plans or suggest certain activities that are on the teacher resource page on the Library of Congress website, so that we can give them something specific and they can spend 5 minutes going online and reading about it or printing something out, or we can do that work for them and give them a set of handouts.
And suggestions and recommendations are available, but the ultimate decision about how to best utilize the primary sources is still up to the teacher.
Yes. The Library of Congress actually has a lot of teacher resources through its website. It has a very wonderful teacher resource page that you can just click on from the main web page, and it has a lot of suggested activities. It has a lot of kind of topic-guided tours through primary sources, and it also has a lot of tools, worksheets, that, for instance, that can help you look at a photograph and know what questions to ask, so your students will get the most out of looking at that photograph. And so it's something that really wants teachers to have specific guided kind of lessons, but teachers can also take that material and do whatever they want with it in their classrooms.
Is this grant going to be applied to helping K through 12 higher education students, or all of the above?
All of the above. Primary sources are important no matter what subject you're studying and no matter what level you're studying at. This will be hopefully a great opportunity for elementary school teachers, middle school teachers, high school teachers, and teachers at the collegiate level.
You've highlighted just four eras for the initial focus: the Age of Jackson, Civil War and Reconstruction, the Depression decade, and World War II together as one, and the Civil Rights Movement. How did you arrive at deciding on those four particular time periods?
Well, these four particular time periods are very significant for Tennessee history because these are times at which events taking place in Tennessee have a resonance across the entire nation. So it's an intersection of Tennessee history and American history. you know, during the civil rights movement, there were a lot of civil rights leaders that were active in Nashville that were very prominent on the national stage. And so that's something that can appeal on a both local level and, you know, for teachers who teach American history in general. And we are concentrating on four different historical periods, just as the first year, part of our plan for the first year of the program, to kind of do topic-driven activities and presentations for teachers. But it's a little misleading because it gives you the impression that we're only interested in using historical material. Mm-hmm. These are different topics in history, but there are so many different kinds of sources that can be applied to them that will hopefully be reaching beyond the bounds of history classes and can be used in art classes, can be used in even math classes, because maps are wonderful for math or geography or science. With the New Deal subject, for instance, you have a lot of engineering and you have a lot of environmental conservation issues that go beyond history. Yeah, Tennessee Valley Authority, 75th anniversary of that. So we want it to go beyond just teachers focused in history. Now this program might be a bit more easily accessible to them or a bit more obvious for them, but we also want to reach out to every kind of educator, even educators in a museum setting or a library setting or a heritage organization setting.
The interactive nature of this, the utilization of digital technology, must be one of the things that is you're anticipating is going to really turn students on about this, because the methodology speaks to their generation.
Well, yes, they've been learning like this for many years. Their brains actually access information differently than, for instance, mine does. And so they're much more at home in this medium. Mm-hmm. And for students who have access in a classroom setting to computers and technology, this is a great way for them to explore specific things. But then the great thing about this is, and the Library of Congress website, is the way it manages to carry you on your own journey. So if a student wants to look up something about Jackie Robinson, for instance, he or she can then do a search, click on a picture or a letter that they like. And then the way these primary sources appear is that they're cross-referenced with other similar topics. So you can just click and go into a related topic. You can look at old baseball cards from the 1950s, or that you can move into the civil rights movement of the 1950s, because Jackie Robinson, obviously, he straddled both worlds there. And so this is a way for students to follow their own interests and to move from source to source, and in that way they can move also from, you know, subject to subject and get a broader, a deeper view about their initial subject.
By comparison, explain how, say, you as a historian before the advent of digital technology, wanting to research primary sources, would have to physically go to the library and do it.
Yes, this should save a lot of travel time and a lot of, oh, so many photocopying cards and dimes and nickels in the machine.
Mm-hmm. But wouldn't you have to ask the librarian for access to a special area of the library?
Yes, you have to write ahead, you have to have a reference, you have to show up on time, you have to travel to a new place, and you
because they've got to keep it in like a climate-controlled place. Some things where
you've got to call it up, you've got to wait for it.
Yeah.
It comes out to you, and if it's not what you needed, then you just possibly wasted a good portion of your day. So this is definitely a time-saving measure, and it also, I just think it engages you so much more, because it's at your fingertips, and you don't have to feel like you have to ask permission from somebody to show it to you, like you shouldn't even be there. Mm-hmm. Granted, I love going into libraries, and I love looking at the actual primary sources themselves, because mm-hmm. it is something to hold them in your hands, but that is a real slight inconvenience and part mm-hmm. of being a researcher, but this is a good way that everybody can be a researcher from just their home or their desk.
Isn't holding certain primary sources in your hands a dicey issue sometimes too because of the age and fragility of
them? Oh yes, there are books that I was not allowed to look at because they were pretty much disintegrating, and there were times when I would have to put on gloves, or I couldn't use a pen, I had to have a pencil, I had to have all of my notebooks checked on my way in and my way out. So yes, this is a way of preserving those sources because they get to stay in a very controlled environment, which means they get to last longer. And it still doesn't quite compare to seeing the real thing, but mm-hmm. it makes that real thing available to future generations.
It may be the only way that certain young people in K through 12 who come from lower income housing or disadvantaged backgrounds ever have to access these primary sources, because they might not be able to afford a computer in their own homes, and the school or mm-hmm. library computer might be the only way they ever get to see these things.
Well, I think that's another great aspect about this program. I mean, it treats every person like the equal American citizen that he or she is, with equal access, if these students have access in their schools, of course. Because this is the heritage of America, and it belongs to everybody. And so this is a way of getting people excited about what is their patrimony. And even for students who don't have computer access in their schools, this program wants to reach out to those schools anyway, and we can provide sources in a hard copy format for those teachers so that they can still use this. It would just require simply photocopying and printing these things out and sending them to a school or a classroom, and then the students can just have them right there in their hands.
Can they also be manipulated in other ways for the teacher's use if they have certain technologies in their classroom, like for use in a PowerPoint or for on a CD-ROM or a DVD or whatever format would be most useful to them? Can it be done that way as well?
Yes, it can. And that is something I'm going to be working on over the next 3 years, because this is the first year of a 3-year program. Mm-hmm. And I am going to be working on developing different media to send out in packets to different schools. I have already given one presentation where I delivered a PowerPoint to teachers. And once teachers learn how easy it is to find these sources and to copy the pictures from the website, then they can also use those in their own PowerPoints.
And this is not just the contiguous counties around Rutherford here in Middle Tennessee.
Oh,
we're
no.
looking about across the
statewide.
State of Tennessee.
Yes, this is the Teaching with Primary Sources program is being implemented in about 8 states now. We're one of the newest partners to join the consortium, and there are well over 8 partners. Some states have more than one institution that is delivering this program, but we're the first to do an entire statewide approach, because working with the Center for Historic Preservation, we have a lot of statewide contacts through just our programs that we do through the center. And so we want to use those in order to reach people East Tennessee, West Tennessee, Middle Tennessee, people from underserved populations, the museum community, the schools, like I said before, the libraries and heritage foundations. We want to reach everybody who is in a position to be educating young people about the wealth of American experience.
And as you said, this is interdisciplinary, it runs across disciplines. You don't necessarily have to be a history teacher to want to utilize it.
No, there are incredible resources for music, through the American Folklife Center. There are Woody Guthrie recordings, you know, there are Leadbelly recordings, there's, you know, some of the real greats, and then there's...
I hope they've got those old, do they have those old Alan Lomax recordings where yes. he went out there with a microphone
yes.
and got the Gandy dancers and all those people?
Yes, Alan Lomax and his father, John Lomax, are two of my heroes. I think that their work is just so important, and a lot of that is available in small sound files mm-hmm. through the online through the American Folklife Center. I mean, you can also buy it through their CD series, which is also very worthwhile.
But just to explain, they went throughout the South and not with professional equipment, but just catching all the ambient noise and everything, like if a car went by or a plane went overhead or something, they would catch, like, for example, people singing in the fields, these folk songs that date back to slave times,
mm-hmm.
Gandy dancers working on the railroads and doing mm-hmm. everything in perfect rhythm with their singing and everything. This is the sound of America working and living and organically using music as part of their it's part of their DNA. It's part mm-hmm. of part of America's DNA.
Yes, the Lomaxes were great because they considered so many other things worthwhile, you know, than just regular traditional forms of music. And it's great because they also talk with the musicians and with the people there. And so when you listen to some of these recordings, you'll just hear one of them having a conversation with the singer or the musician before the song begins. And so you get a lot of oral history mixed in there because it is inseparable mm-hmm. From the music. And that's one of my favorite parts. It's kind of harder to stick into a PowerPoint,
yeah.
but it's certainly something that I think kids would love to hear in the classroom, because not only is it just a very immediate way for them to get excited, engaged, and empowered with primary sources, but mm-hmm. also it's a different kind of learning because it's not just visually based, it's audio. And that brings in a lot of different skill sets that students need to develop. And so it kind of helps develop a lot of critical thinking and listening skills.
What about other audio and video? I'm thinking more as a journalist of moments of history that were captured, the shooting of Lee Harvey Oswald captured by television cameras, things of that nature, the Zapruder film of President Kennedy being assassinated, all these sorts of things, some of which are available and have been posted on YouTube. It's one of the reasons I like looking at YouTube is there's more yeah. historical stuff on YouTube than you might think, especially from the history of television. Are things like that available as well?
I don't know. There, I have not yet had a chance to plumb everything.
Yeah.
But
not those specific things, but things of that nature.
That's something that I haven't heard as much about in terms of famous moments from broadcast history.
Mm. The things that were captured by broadcast journalists, by television journalists who happened to be at the scene when something
right.
happened like that, that was of historic import.
That's not something that I know is available through this.
It might
website.
Be more difficult to get those things because of copyright issues from the networks and things
well,
like that.
Yeah, copyright issues are something that you have to be keeping in mind when you are mm-hmm. using a lot of these sources. But no, that's not something mm-hmm. that I know is available through the Library of Congress website.
The copyright issues wouldn't be something that the teacher would have to worry about because
oh, no.
for educational purposes,
yes.
it's all usable.
Yes, and one of the different parts of the program is explaining not just how to find these sources, but how to use them. And part of that is just the explanation that for copyright purposes, when you're using these things in an educational setting, mm-hmm. then you are free to do so without obtaining permission. So we don't want teachers to think that that's going to be a roadblock.
Yeah. I wonder if little kids, when they are come into, you know, close proximity, they're taken to a museum or a library or something, and they come into close proximity with an artifact or something, if they want to really reach out and touch it, but they know they can't because it's in a glass case or something like that, are they going to see these digital artifacts and go, I want to touch this guy's cane, I want to touch Teddy Roosevelt's glasses, or, you know, whatever it happens to be?
Well, that's a reaction that you do not want in a museum, but you do want with a website, mm-hmm. because it helps excite the students, and when they want to know more about it, even maybe they can't touch it when it's on the screen, but maybe they have a local history museum or a local historic house museum that has a similar type object.
Now, some history museum exhibits are intended to be interactive,
yes,
and tactile, and some are not. And I suppose it's important to teach your little kid the difference at a very early age.
Yes. Well, that's something that you don't really have to worry about when it comes as a printout from your computer screen.
Okay. You're going to be exposing teachers around the state to this program in a teleconference that is going to emanate from here, mm-hmm. at MTSU on December 4th. From 3:30 to 4:30 Central Time, in which you will be explaining this to teachers and librarians. Can you tell us a little bit about that? Is it essentially the, but it's going to be geared more toward what the educator needs to know than the general overview that we're giving here, right?
Yes. I mean, we do want to introduce the program to educators that are not familiar with it, but at the same time, we want them to be able to take something useful away with them, and we are going to be doing lesson plans with the Age of Jackson and the Civil War and Reconstruction eras, so I will be putting together different diverse primary source sets relating to those two topics and explaining to teachers how they can find those and use those in the classroom.
It is entitled Engaged, Empowered, and Excited Teaching with Primary Sources. It is a professional development program for teachers. As I said, it will be on December the 4th from 3:30 to 4:30 p.m. Central Time, or 4:30 to 5:30 Eastern. And if you want to find out more about the teleconference, then call the video conferencing technical clerk here at MTSU at 615 area code 898-2737, or send an email to vmoxley@mtsu.edu. That's V-M-O-X-L-E-Y at mtsu.edu. And if you're a member of the general public and you want to learn more about the Library of Congress grant to the Center for Historic Preservation, Stacy, who do they call? Who do they email?
You call me. You email me. My phone number is 615-494-8783. My email is sgraham@mtsu.edu, and you can also look at our website, which is www.mtsu.edu/TPS, and that stands for Teaching Primary Sources.
And a special shout out to the Tennessee Congressional Delegation, which helped acquire the funding,
yes,
for this project.
Yes, Senators Alexander and Corker and our Congressman Bart Gordon, we thank them very much.
Dr. Stacy Graham, thank you very much for being here.
Well, thank you so much, Tina.
This is MTSU on the Record. Please be sure to be with us again at this same time next Sunday. If you want to catch any or all of this broadcast again or any of our prior programs, go to mtsunews.com and check out the podcast. And remember, we're also available on iTunes.